I know this world is full of wicked people because Jesus tells me that it is. Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Jesus said, "Straight is the gate and narrow is the way that leads to life. Few there be that find it. But wide is the gate, broad is the way that leads to destruction. And many there are that go in thereafter." I can read my newspaper and tell exactly the same thing. The crimes that are committed splashed across the headlines of the front page. On the 6 o'clock news, 10 o'clock news, on the television, radio, same thing. I look around where we live. You look around Houston area, and I look around the Dallas area, and we find a burglary in the neighborhood, a murder in the area. And I'm made to realize that this world, indeed, as the Bible depicts it, is full of wicked people. Yet I am amazed at the conspiracy of silence about these people. Because their presence is so well known, and yet, for some reason, some of them, sometime, somewhere, someplace, must die. The statistics for death are the same, always have been the same. One out of one. For every man born of woman, that man dies. And if they die, surely they must have funerals. And yet I never hear the funerals. Instead, you hear the people say outside the funeral home as they gather, they say, "You know, he never was a member of the church, of any church. I don't recall him ever attending any church as far as I know. He really didn't stand for anything godly, or he wasn't a representative or an ambassador for Christ." But they say, but still, really deep down, he was a fine Christian man. In the musical Oklahoma, if you'll remember that old musical, there's a song entitled, "Poor Judd is Dead." Poor Judd was the town bad man. He was a drunk. Good for nothing. But when he died, the preacher intoned these beautiful words about Judd. He said, "Judd loved everybody and everything. He loved the little tree or the little birds and the trees. He loved all of the little children. But he said nobody ever knowed because Judd never let on. Poor Judd is dead." It's strange that none of the wicked people that we know exist, none of them ever die. And if they do die, they never have funerals. And if they do die, they're never buried. Every cemetery I have ever walked through is filled with nothing but righteous people. You can read it on the tombstones. A number of years ago, I was conducting a graveside service. We had had the chapel service in a funeral home, and we had moved to the cemetery. And I was doing a graveside service for a gentleman. And when I got through, and I had visited with the family there, the funeral director that I had done a lot of funerals there, so I knew him pretty well. Funeral director said, "Come with me." He said, "I want to show you something over here historical." And he took me, it wasn't 50 yards, less than that, 25 yards, from where I had been standing at the tent doing a graveside service, and he took me over there and he showed me a tombstone, an old tombstone. had these words engraved on it. I wrote them down. I had to look this week to find it. But I wrote them down and filed them. Said, as the flowers are all made sweeter by the sunshine and the dew, so this old world was made brighter by the lives of folks like you. And as I looked at the tombstone, engraved on it was the name Bonnie Parker, October 1st, 1910 to May 23rd, 1934. This was Bonnie Parker's grave. If you don't remember, Bonnie Parker was the Bonnie of the notorious Bonnie and Clyde that went through Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana during the Depression days. Bonnie and Clyde, they robbed banks. They gunned down people in cold blood. They lived evil, wicked lives on the other side of the law. They were probably two of the most feared people during that day of good, decent people. But her grave marker says, this old world was made brighter by the lives of folks like you. Just walk through the cemeteries. Read the tombstones. Read the markers. Gone to be with Jesus. At rest with God. At peace at last. But you never, ever read any tombstone that says a sinner gone to punishment with God. You just don't read it. It's not out there. It wouldn't sell. Nobody would buy that one. Because you see, we don't countenance such things. We just don't believe such things could really happen. And in that strained emotional moment, we won't believe it. But yet Solomon says in Ecclesiastes chapter 8, Solomon says, I saw the wicked buried. He recognized them. He said, I saw the man who was praised in the city, bragged about in his death. And now buried. But Solomon said, but God does not pay off all of his debts at that time. You know, recently, I began looking through the Bible for funeral orations. I was preparing for a funeral one day, and I thought, I'm going to go through here and just see what examples I can find in the Bible. There's such a famous thing with us today, and even more famous in the bygone days in America, that when a great man or a great woman dies, people assemble in great throngs and someone stands up before them and gives the eulogy. The word eulogy literally translates into good word. So they say, would you stand up and give the good word? Say the good words about the person. And so we stand up, and if a person is high enough in their accomplishments, and if they stand notorious enough in the great things they've done to shape the world, then maybe a speech of an hour's length even would be called for. But do you know, as I read the Bible, I went through it looking page by page, looking for funeral orations. And I looked at what God's men said about God's men when they died. And I tried all of the great ones I could think of. I looked at Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses and David and Solomon. And do you know I couldn't find a single funeral oration for any of these men? Now, I can find some things out about their death, you understand. I found out a lot said about the circumstances that surrounded their death. Moses, leading the people for 40 years through the wilderness, makes his way to the very brink of the promised land. God said, Moses, leave the people on the plains. Go to Mount Nebo. Go up to the peak of Pisgah. Look across into the promised land. Look carefully and see it. Because Moses, you're not going in. Because you didn't reverence me in the eyes of the people, you will not go over. And then it says, Moses died, and God closed his eyes and buried him away from the people, where nobody knows where his grave is. I read that. I read of Abraham and Sarah. They were buried in the cave of Machpelah. I read about the purchase price. I can find out what they paid for their cave to be buried in. See all the details around it. There's no eulogy there. I read of people, of how long they lived, 120 years, 147 years, and they died. But you know the thing that's the most common, the pattern that pops up of the way in inspired script, what's said most of the time, it goes something like this. They'll say he lived 120 years. He was gathered to his fathers. He died, was buried, and his son reigned in his stead. It's amazing that God, by inspiration, didn't see fit to spend a lot of time on funeral orations. Even the greatest, mightiest men didn't receive many, just a passing mention, and then life flowed on. Now, there are some exceptions. There are a couple of exceptions that I found, at least. Probably more. I'm not saying I did an exhaustive study on this. But the two biggest exceptions that I found, they happened to be done by the same man, King David. King David is the one that gave the orations. One of them was good. One of them was bad. You heard the good one read a moment ago. King Saul and his son Jonathan died on Mount Gilboa under the threat of the Philistines' swords and spears. And the messenger ran to David to tell him the story, to bring him the news that now finally, at last, the door was open. It was clear for him to become the king of all of Israel. David heard that. And though the bodies were not present, he uttered a bittersweet lament of a man who had lost his finest and nearest friend, Jonathan, whom he loved like a brother. The kinship, the Bible says, between him and Jonathan was more wonderful than the love of women. And then he also had that strange, haunting melody of a love for a king that would have killed him, tried to kill him. Would have been successful if he had tried, King Saul trying to kill David. But David said in 2 Samuel chapter 1, you heard it read a moment ago, a great prince has fallen in Israel today. How are the mighty fallen? And thus he traced the course of an oration in memorial of those that he had loved so much. But likewise, David also presented another lament of someone who was lost, someone who had died a cruel death. This funeral oration was not a happy one. It wasn't a good one. In the days when David was still trying to take over as the king of all of Israel, he'd been crowned by Judah. But the rest of the tribes up north, they had not crowned him yet. And he was playing the waiting game. Waiting, hoping, wondering when the moment would come when God would make it all possible. Abner came to see him. Abner was the commander-in-chief of the armies of Saul's son. Abner came to David and said, it's just only right that God would put you over all 12 of the tribes of Israel. And he said, I've come as the strong man, military man of the opposition. And I will deliver the tribes to you. David accepted that. The bargain was struck, and Abner made his way away from the city. While he was on his way, leaving the city, Joab comes in. Joab is the commander-in-chief of David's army. And he comes back, and he hears the news of what's happened. Joab doesn't trust Abner. He doesn't like this deal that David made with him. So Joab, without David's understanding, without David's knowledge, Joab sent word to Abner to come back to the city. Abner goes back privately. David's unaware of all this. Joab goes back. I don't know why it goes back. Maybe he's thinking he's going to get a better deal. Maybe he's thinking that Joab's going to sweeten the deal for him. But he goes back. And he goes to meet with Joab. And when he walks in, Joab pulls out his knife and plunges it into Abner, stabs him, and kills him. They pick up the body. They took Abner back into the city, laid him out on the funeral bier, and David made another oration. It's found in 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 33. David said, "Died Abner as a fool dieth. Your hands were not bound, your feet were not tethered, are fettered, but as a man falls before the wicked, so ye fell, died as a fool dies." That's a strong, strange funeral oration. And yet I'm convinced this morning we really need to understand that we ought to have some orations like that at the funeral of the wicked, that we might understand and see things as God sees them. So I want to compose a couple of laments for you this morning for those who die outside of Christ, stand in rebellion against God. There's the man who comes to the end of his days an unbeliever. Never knew God, never believed God, never accepted his way, and yet he comes to that last sad moment and he wants someone to say the good words, the eulogy at the last. Some funeral homes have had to hire people, put them on staff, to say good words about people that nobody knows anything good to say. And they pay them so much, give them a flat fee, so much per funeral. David said, "Let me add the postscript to that kind of man. Let me tack on a part to the funeral oration." David said, "This is what I see." David was always quick to say, "This is what I think needs to be said about those who have died." David said in Psalm 14, verse 1, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God." David said only the fool could look up into the heavens and see the glory of God, see the heavens declaring the glory of God, and see the firmament which shows his handiwork. David said, how could he come to this moment and not know? Romans chapter 1, the Apostle Paul says, "Let me tell you, brethren, the visible things you see, they are proof, they testify to the invisible God." So Paul says, they are without excuse. The things around us, the beauty around us, the universe that we're in, Paul says, you see that and it testifies to an invisible God. So if you come to that moment and you've looked at God's great handiwork all of your life, you've beheld the stars and the planets and their orbits, you look at the little tiny bits of life in this world growing, testifying day after day to God's power, and you come to this moment, David said, the only thing that I can say is died as the fool died. Now, that's a tragic thing to say that. Nobody, none of us want to get up and say that. But if we looked with heaven's eyes, that's what we'd have to say. My friend, if you sit in this audience this morning and you've never believed strongly enough that God really exists, why not today? If you say Jesus Christ must be something, why not believe he's the Son of God? All the evidence points that direction. All the evidence tells us that, and if you believe it, why not take action on it today, this hour, before the hour comes when you too will have to have words said over you, and the only thing left to say is what David said. Don't let that happen. You may say, yeah, but that's not me. It's not that I don't believe in God. There's another group of folks that they base their life on an entirely different basis, and it's based on things. Things. They say the thing that's important to me is to have things that I can grab and grasp and hold on to. If I can just have more than anybody else, if I can just lay up enough for this life, I'll be a happy, redeemed man for living. But the truth of the matter is, if that's the way a person lives, they finally come to the end, and the funeral oration that has to be said over them comes from the words of the Apostle Paul, 1 Timothy chapter 6. We brought nothing into this world, and we're going to carry nothing out. It's a shame. It's a shame to come to the end when so many flowers sometimes, bouquets, a profusion of bouquets, mark the passing of a person. But whether it be money or flowers or whatever it is, Paul says you can't grab hold of it. You can't take it in your hand and take it with you. For the day will come when we'll hear the words of Jesus, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon the earth, where moth and rust corrupt and thieves break through and steal. Lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, where the ravages of time can't touch it." Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. But then there's one other category, one other oration that I'd like to think about this morning. And that's the one that seems to me like the biggest group of folks out there fall into. And that is that it's more innocuous than the one that I don't believe or the one that I'm greedy and I want to hold on to my things. This is one that where people think in a harmless way, or they think it's harmless. It's not. But they have decided, I'm just going to live life my way. I'll do it my way. Heard recently of a very prominent man. He died, and at his funeral, he had requested only one song. And that one song was, and they sang it, "I Did It My Way." What a tragedy. What a tragedy to come to the end of life, and their funeral oration demands that song. My way. I did it my way. Jesus said to everyone who hears these words of mine and builds upon them, Matthew chapter 7 says, they build upon a rock. And when the rains come, the floods come, the winds blow and beat upon the house, it does not fall because it's founded on a rock. But he said there's another man that hears, and he's a foolish man. He hears the same words, but he decides, I'm not going to go that way. He decides he will build on what he wants to build on, what he wants to do. He makes decisions based on what seems rational to him, what seems good to him. He ignores the Bible, ignores the Word of God. He doesn't worry about God's thoughts, but he says, I'll do it my way because this appeals to me. Jesus says that man has built his house on the shifting sand. It looks so tremendously stable. It looks just like the rock. It looks like it would be as good as the rock. And it is until the storm comes. But when the storm comes, he says, great will be the fall of that house. Jesus said, you build on my words. My words. Do you realize You are writing your own funeral oration now. Oh, the day will come when somebody else will stand up and say it. But you write it. If they're honest, you write it because they'll be handcuffed. They're going to be bound by the kind of life that you've lived. They are going to be tied to the example that you have set. And when that moment comes, some words will come, but these words will be entirely dependent upon you. Robert Ingersoll, who was a lawyer, very famous politician in 19th century America. Ingersoll was one of the most outspoken voices in that day for agnosticism, atheism. He had an agreement with his brother, who was also a congressman. And their agreement was, whichever one dies first, the other one will speak at the funeral. Well, it worked out that the younger brother died first, and so Colonel Robert Ingersoll delivered the funeral oration. Just a selection from that message, I think, exemplifies for us how difficult things can be in that last sad moment when no faith in God exists. Ingersoll said with his eloquent words, "Life is a narrow veil lived between the cold and barren peaks of two eternities. We strive in vain to look beyond the heights. We call aloud. The only answer is the echo of a wailing cry. From the voiceless lips of the unreplying dead, there comes no word. But in the night of death, hope sees a star, and the listening love can hear the rustle of a wing. He who sleeps here when dying, mistaking the approach of death for the return of health, whispered with his last breath, 'I'm better now.' Let us believe, in spite of doubts and dogmas, tears and fears, that those dear words are true of all the countless dead." And with these words, with that said, the silver-tongued orator Ingersoll leaned himself upon the casket and he burst into uncontrollable weeping. In spite of doubts and dogmas, tears and fears, he said, listening love wants to hear the sound of a rustling wing. That is a sad ending to a life. That is a forlorn cry of a man who says, "I can't believe, but I wish I could. I wish I could." How much better, how much nobler, how much more uplifting are the words of the Apostle Paul that we studied in our Bible class this morning. When the Apostle Paul says, "I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to me, shall award to me on that day." That could be the final line of your life, if you'll make it so. Today, this morning, right now, as we stand and sing.